Continue a little bit with the Indian of Elevated Varatim Chaim, which I'm very happy to do if you feel like it, otherwise we could go on to the next person. So any feelings on the subject? And there is a show of hands who wants to go on to Elevated? Wants to remain as is with Elevated? What's that? You wait long enough. So shall we say on this Eilu Ve'Eilu Divra like in Chaim? Change it on. What? In Pesach, there has to be a Pesach. Well, maybe talk about it's Efshel Kaim Shneim. And that's just a wrap up of what we talked last week and try and clarify that issue and then we'll go on. I'm not sure exactly what we covered last week. See, when the Rabban Shem gave the Torah to Klal Yisrael, you're faced over here with an inner problem, with an inner contradiction, which can really only have the solution which it does have. In other words, the solution is a perfectly good solution, but it's a solution which has to exist. See, when you try to be machnes, something that is infinite, into finite kalim, then you have trouble. You know all the things that they say about Torah. I'm not sure exactly that I know what they mean. The precise context, Moshel, you know that the Medayik and Torah, Yogata. Lom Motzosi is Altam in Yogata U Motzosi. It should be Yogati U Motzosi. It should be Tamin. So I don't know who made this diuk, but it's a word which is Meruvah, that even after the Yogiyah, it remains a Metziah. Right? Normally we don't associate a Metziah with coming as a result of Yogiyah. When I'm Yogeya in something, when I work very hard to figure something out, so then when I figured it out, so that is the result of my hard labor. It's not something which I found. A metziah is something which I find by chance. So that's what they say, that Torah, which is a godly wisdom, is something which essentially we can only get the derech metziah. It's a gift which the Ribono Shel Olam gives to us. Not sure that I know what that means. In Sof Kol Sof, the material of the Torah is the Chayrob, Mutter, Osa, Tomei, Toha, and should the Chayrob lend itself to a kind of intellectual activity which would yield results in any other discipline too. Afa Pichain, it's understandable that Torah is a very special kind of chokhmah. And one supposes that even at the more simple levels of Torah, in other words, where Torah is clearly defined law, do this, don't do this, be chayiv under these circumstances, be potter under those circumstances, it's still very special, because that we do believe, that surely Torah contains these hadrochas, but is certainly not limited to them, and that the halachas with which we deal certainly have shroshim in deeper yesoidas. Okay, and I can't tell you what I'm saying, because I don't know what I'm saying, but I'm sure that is so, and so there has to be a hasoma between that which is accessible to me at a tangible level, and the inner truths of the Torah. So it is a different kind of chokhmah. There is a point which needs making, and I'm not sure whether this is something which lies in the nature of Torah as Torah, or in the way in which we learn Torah. Somebody came once in the time that I'm a lawyer, he says, and I'm a pretty good lawyer, and I don't care what law it is. Is it English common law? Is it Turkish law? Is it Roman law? Tell me what law you want me to study. And I'll tell you, give me 2 years, give me 3 years, and I'll know that body of law. Why can't I do the same with Torah? I've been learning for 10 years, I've been conveyed in the Torah, and I still don't know anything. Why is it? In other words, it is true that it seems that there seems to be some difficulty, something about Torah, which makes it harder to assimilate. That fellow was right. There's no body of law in the world which you can't master in a few years. Again, I don't talk from experience, but I understand it's posture like that. And you have the texts, and you read the books, and the number of men, and that's it. And then you know it. So why is Torah not that way? Now, is it really, yes, that way? Is it really that way? Is it really true that Torah would really be as accessible as any other law system, except that we tackle it wrong? For example, I mean, surely when I'm learning Turkish law, I don't say chaburas. In other words, there's no word over there in the two shittas, like understand the lambdas of the Gedorim. Stamina. Otherwise it sounds Greek to them. But that's not the word. So maybe we allow ourselves to get sidetracked. In other words, that there is, in fact, a body of law in Torah also, which, if we would approach it in the correct way, that means with the methodology which is matim to it, we could taka absorb it. Whatever I told you over from Rav Weinberg, or you're tying a pshat in the Rambam, which I think surely means that. The two Rambams, the one Rambam, did I mention it? Right, the Rambam that Yilmat Torah v'achakach Yisa Isha. What does it mean, Yilmat Torah v'achakach Yisa Isha? I mean, what's the Torah? So when should I marry at 120? The Torah says, apparently there is a body of Torah which is called Torah, and that you should know, and you can know, before you get married. Why would Lam Shal like that in the Rambam, that what the Rambam said in Zagdama, that now you only have to know my Sefer. Learn Torah Shubiksav and my Sefer, and you'll know Kol HaTorah Kula. Rambam also knew that you don't know Kol HaTorah Kula with his Sefer. But what he meant is, you know Kol HaTorah Kula, you know that body of law. In other words, the body of law, which is what Torah Shubal Peh is, that means the Mishnah. I don't mean our Mishnah with a capital M, of Yehuda Nosi's Mishnah. I mean what the Rambam calls Mishnah, which means that aspect of Torah which is codified and available, which is not medame milsel milsel, which is not achris dover mereshisa, but it's a simple absorption of what to do and what not to do, that is a well-defined, clear body of material and can be absorbed. Why don't we do it? I don't know why we don't do it. Are we right in not doing it? I can't say that either. I don't suppose we are. I mean, certainly not the way the Rambam formulates the chiyuvim. So maybe it is true. I really don't know. It's just something that I don't know. But all I do know is that our learning does not yield that kind of clarity in the total body of law which we know of as Torah. Maybe the reason is because Torah doesn't end. So maybe it is because Yogati and Motsosi Tamin. Maybe it is because Torah can be absorbed only by somebody who receives it as a gift from the Rabbani Shlomo. I call upon him, that is a problem. The Malachim meant something, or let's put it this way, Chazal meant something when they tell us this agoda of the Malachim objecting to the Torah being given to us. So they held that there's something stiridic between the Torah and human beings having the Torah. So what's the stira? And or rather, what is the answer to the stira? And the answer to the stira is this, that if the Rebbeinu Shalom gives an absolute Torah, or which was absolute before Moshe Rabbeinu took it. And he gives that to human beings, so then inherent in that giving lies that now the infinities of Torah will run through finite minds. And those finite minds, made up as they are of millions of factors, preconceived ideas, preconceived notions, assumptions, language limitations. What do the words mean? What do the words mean to me? The written Torah is sof kol sof a Torah's chayim, but in a way, has to be fossilized. Why? Because the same words don't mean the same things in different generations. You use them differently. It's poshut like that. See, when you have a living language, which Lashon HaKodesh was and once more is, so you can trace in your own experiences how different words take on different shades of meaning as life progresses. So now when we go back to Chumash and read what the Torah says, do we hear the same story which they heard at the time when the Torah was given? Do the words convey the same kind of meaning to us? Surely not. The Havdil, if you go and read Shakespeare, right, you'll see that you have a lot of difficulty understanding. Because the English that he spoke and the meaning that words had as he used them went through a constant development. And versteht sich, that is true. That's true in any living language. There's no way to avoid that. That's because living language is used by living people. And living people have different experiences and different ideas and different contexts. And so language changes. So by putting an infinite Torah into finite words, Ramban, right, in his Hakdama, that the Torah is Oisius of the Ribbono Shel Olam, with an infinite variety of options for tzirut. Okay, yeah, but now once it was given to man, so now it's Bereishis Boro Elokim Es HaShemayim Ve'es HaOrez. These words don't sound to us, or don't mean to us, what they meant to the generation of the people to whom they were said. And that's constantly true. And that is why we need Bichlal to be very, very modest and very, very unassuming in our ideas of what it says in the Torah, because we need always to be aware that it could be very, very easy to miss nuances and to miss meanings, which to somebody else would have been absolutely like aleph beis. And we just don't know. Give you a mashal. I'm just in my Divrei Yomim work. I'm just now at a posuk, and I'd give an arm and a leg to know what the posuk means. And I just can't figure it out because the word isn't clear enough to me. It talks about the Sefer Torah which they found in Yoshio's time. So there's an issue over there. Vayove oisa el hamelech. So Shofen HaSoifer brought it to the king. Now it happens to be nageya to me. It's not nageya to tell you the whole story, but it's nageya to me. What does vayove mean? Does it mean a physical bringing? Right, that it was sitting over here and now it's over here? Or does it mean a bringing to attention? Right? Vayove oisa, that he showed it to him, that he interested him in it, that he brought it to his attention. Now, you can see that both meanings are perfectly legitimate in the word. Yeah, we can even in the English idiom, right, you have the same bringing. You bring to attention and you bring. Yeah, you bring me a cup of tea and you bring something to my attention. Right? So there you have a different nuance in the word to bring. And I just don't know. I don't know how this thing was used in Tanakh. I have no idea. It could be that the word at that time was soivel both meanings. It could be that this is an English idiosyncrasy and isn't true in Hebrew, and that Vayoveh only means a physical bringing. I just don't know. Right? Now let's say that I would come out in my commentary, right, to the Vayom, and I would come out and I would write in my art scroll thing some shot in this pasuk which would imply a bringing to attention, let's say. Right? Now that could be totally wrong, because it could be that I'm reading into the text something which, it's legitimate enough, you can understand why I did it, because the word bring has that ring to me, right? It sounds like that to me, but it's maybe totally wrong, because maybe then Loshon HaKodesh doesn't have that quality at all. Okay, so anything that you clothe in a language is doomed to misunderstanding. Whether that is the reason why the Ribbono Shel Olam also made a Torah Shebaal Peh, or the Rishonim Achoike in the Shaila, why is there a Torah Shebaal Peh together with a Torah Shebiksav, is the reason so that through Mesorah of word of mouth, the integrity of the Torah should be preserved? Maybe, I have no idea. If that is the reason, it's certainly only in a limited sense, because Versteht sich allein, that even that kind of Mesorah can change very, very much over the doors, because it goes through the human mind. Now, once the Ribbono Shel Olam has done that, and once the Ribbono Shel Olam has given his Torah to us, so he's obviously willing to live with that, because that's built into the fact of Matan Torah. Built into the fact of Matan Torah is that it is now toloi on human understanding. There's no way of avoiding that. Not only is there no way of avoiding that, that is the Ratzon of the Ribbono Shel Olam, that is the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants Torah to go through our minds, and it's the Shofet Asheyir Bayomim Hohem, whom he's supposed to listen to. So, if it's built in to the system that the lecha'ira objective truths of the Torah suddenly become subject to the subjective understanding of a human being, so built into that then is the danger that Torah will be practiced incorrectly. So, what does that mean? Is that something that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to risk? I mean, and is it going to be taka toloi in the total mikra of, for example, who happens to be in the majority at a given point, that either Klal Yisrael does the right thing or Klal Yisrael does the wrong thing? In other words, if, for example, Beis Hillel just happened to be in the majority over Beis Shammai, maybe the cooking was better in his yeshiva and people enjoyed it more and they went there. Well, why were there more Talmidim by Hillel than by Shammai? I don't know. Yeah? These are people who lived in history, right? And the things that happened, they got up in the morning, they went to davening, they had breakfast, and they had Talmidim. Talmidim made a decision, should I go to this yeshiva, should I go to that yeshiva? That's what happened. We don't know why more went there than there. Are we miming that there was a hashgacha in that? I assume so, but it happened also in a physical sense. So why were there more Talmidim by Hillel and Shammai? I don't know. All right, so I said a funny thing because the food was better. Maybe there were other reasons, right? Maybe Shammai was too strict. Maybe the Talmidim wanted more. I have no idea. But now, let's say that Klape Shmaya Galya, Shammai was right. That Shammai was right. That a Tzoras Habas is Mutter. So what, now that we passed like this, Hillel, does that mean we did wrong? Does it mean that Deure, Deures, right? all are doing the wrong thing. They're doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us not to do. And the reason why that happened was because by chance Beis Hillel was in a majority over Beis Shammai. So that's something which is very, very difficult to live with. It's not something which I would want to believe. Elonai, much, much more comfortable way of understanding it. The fact that it's comfortable doesn't make it true. But I think that I'm comfortable with it because it's the sort of concept which is miskabel in Klal Yisrael, is that this, that once we paskan that way, because the life is machia that way, it is the truth. It's not wrong, but it's right. Not because it is objectively right, but because built in to the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave his Torah to human beings is the fact that he makes the Torah then a relative rather than an objective emes. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, my rotzai is that you should do that which the halacha is mechayev to do. Therefore, if we paskin like Beis Hillel, because Beis Hillel is the roiv, so we are doing the rotzon Hashem. Are we doing that which was absolutely the kavanah of the Ribbono Shel Olam? Are we doing that which is the distilled form of that absolute Torah, which the Ribbono Shel Olam had before he gave it to us? We don't know. That's the Gemara in Nasoras HaPoelim, which we quoted last week. Ribbono Shel Olam said to her, if Rabbi Bar Nachmani would have been machriya tome, the halacha would have been tome, which would have meant that that which human beings are practicing as the rotzon of the Ribbono Shel Olam happens not to be matim with the absolute truth. That is how I understand the shayrish of the concept of Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim, meaning that once the Torah was given over to human beings, and it is built in to the rotzon of the Ribbono Shel Olam that his infinite Torah must pass through finite minds with the obvious limitations which that places upon the availability of absolute truth. So therefore, it must be that Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim. In other words, that the potential rotzon of the Ribbono Shel Olam could have been reflected in Beis Hillel's, in Beis Shammai's ideas, as well as they can and are reflected in Beis Hillel's ideas. Because it's only Beis Hillel's ideas which are binding on me today, because they happened to be in the Roiv, and therefore the halacha of Acharei Rabim Lahatos is b'chayiv me to do this. It is the Rotzon Hashem, not because it is the objective truth, but because it is one of many possible truths which are accessible through the Midas Sha'atoyro Nidreshes Bohem, given the frailty of the human mind and given the limitations of the human mind. Therefore, the conclusions which Beis Shammai reached by precisely the same method, but in a Shammayan system, is also the Divrei Elokim Chaya. It is also a possible conclusion which can be drawn. Which means that when the Ribbono Shel Olam gave the Torah to Klal Yisrael, he knew that it would be possible within the Gedorim, which he lays down, to reach the conclusion which Beis Hillel reached, to reach the conclusion which Beis Shammai reached, and like the Moran Gittin over the right with the Nima, Lots of Nikachoimer and Sons of Nikachoimer. Now say this. The Ribbono Shel Olam is guide us both. That is Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim. I don't know whether this is emes, this is the way I understand it. Now the technicality of whether this klal of Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim applies to to anybody other than Beshama and Beshela, whether it applies to every single machloikas in Klal Yisrael, through the Mishnayos, through the Gemaras, through to our Dvar, I do not know. I can tell you. I can tell you that my svara, the way I understand it, is that yes, it should apply. Because given the hasbara, which I told you just now, it would follow that any conclusion legitimately reached by legitimate methods within the Midas Shatoira Nidreshes Bohen, and I don't mean now the Dafka Midas Shatoira Nidreshes Bohen in the sense of the Yud Gimel Midas of Rabbi Shmoy, but I mean the Midas Shatoira Nidreshes Bohen in a broader sense. Meaning that if a Yid sits down and he learns, and he learns the Torah Shebiksav, and he learns the Torah Shebal Peh, and he listens to Rabbein, and he allows his mind to be formed in a Torahic way, and then he sits down and he tries to be Mevara, what is the Ratzon Hashem in this particular matzav? What would the Torah want me to do? And he reaches a certain conclusion. Then that is a conclusion which is built into the Torah as reachable. What if this person is not a tzaddik yisoid olam? What if this person has megiyus? What if this person has ulterior motives which guide him into reaching one conclusion over another? Well, that's a problem for every human being, because the human being without ulterior motives hasn't been created yet. So there's no such thing in the world as a human being who is totally and without any kind of reservation, without interest. Everybody has. So therefore, if the Torah was given to human understanding, then that too is built into the Torah. And the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us not to be perfect, because perfection is beyond us, but wants us to try our best and to be as honest as we can possibly bring ourselves to be. And apparently, if we are, then the Ribbono Shel Olam is maskin to our conclusions. The laws of the Nikachorim. What is our relationship vis-a-vis this Shaila? When I say that nobody can divorce himself from some kind of ulterior motive, that's true and not true. It's true because it's true, but obviously it doesn't mean that a person ought to reach conclusions on the basis of his negias. It means a person must certainly try to divorce himself of his negias. Now, can he do that? Is there such a thing as a person getting down as far as is possibly possible to rid himself of energies? Well, any ideas? How would you go about it? If you were to have a shaila to solve, and you want to be pretty sure that you're going to reach the Torahic conclusion, but you know that you have negiyus, what would you do? Let's leave out the easy way of going to ask a shaila. Obviously, if you have someone you can ask a shaila to, who has less negiyus than you, that's surely a good method. But let's say that you are left to your own devices. What would be a way of assuring that you'll get, okay, I can see where that's helpful to some extent. I don't know that it'll help very much. Are there any better ideas or other ideas? Do forget. But that happens not to be true, because, you know, occasionally my instincts are on the right side too. What? Okay. Yeah? Yeah, but you know, but I am not gay. I mean, what?
What? Yeah, why are you against the law?
I'll tell you why. It's going to cost me $1,000. So now I know. What's that?
$1,000, you got $1,000. Right? Maybe
you mean you can, I mean, that's essentially what the others are saying. I said, you can figure out whether you're not gay. Right. What I wanted to say was what the Chazanus said, which is a very, very important, you saw it now, I don't know whether it'll work so well for us, but it's the only logical way. I don't think there's any way in the world that you can get rid of Nagias. And the only way to avoid that is to counter that with a stronger Nagias. The person is always going to be Nagaya. So what are you going to do if you're more hungry than you're thirsty? What are you going to do? Are you going to eat or are you going to drink? You're going to eat, right? In other words, although the thirst is a very strong motivating force, but you'll only follow it if you don't have a stronger one. Right? Because he says that one of the big Yetzirahs of our Daya is that when you hear, let's say, an Adam Godel said a certain thing, a certain hachra in a certain matter, so there's a tendency to say, well, I don't have to follow what he says, he was negeir. He had an ulterior motive. The reason why he said this and this and this was because of such and such a negeir. So somebody's going to go to this fellow and say, hey, how can you say that? I mean, the Kabbal, the Das of Tamidei Chachamim, so there's no, it's very impossible for catch. And this Adam Godel happens to be Nagaya in this matter, and therefore I have no obligation to listen to him. So the Chazanish says that that is a fallacy. That's wrong. You mustn't reason like that. But that is an Eitzah of the Yetzer Hara. He says that the reason for that is as follows. Says, yes, it's true that the Torah says that the Shoychad is Ya'aveh Enei Chachamim. It's Emes. But that is the Shoychad which the Torah asset. And the Shoychad which the Torah asset is Shoychad in Din. In a very clearly defined context. If you are a judge, a president, and you are offered Shoychad by one of the Baalei Dinim, that is an Issa Torah to accept. If you accept it, you're taking poison. Once you take poison, it is ma'aveh, you're ene chachamim, and you're misalev, divrei tzaddik. But in context in which the Torah does not asa shaychad, for example, if it's not an issue of din, let's say it's an issue of issa v'heter, which brings the moshul. I'm a Talmud Chacham, that's what I told you before, with $1,000. I'm a Talmud Chacham, and I have a liquor store, and I have $100,000 worth of stock. And now there's a shailon from its shovel of a pesa. Did I sell it right or didn't I sell it right? If I sold it right, I can buy it back after Pesach, no problem. If I didn't sell it right, from its shovel of a pesa, and I've lost $100,000. There's nothing in halacha which stops me from paskening that shailon. I stand to win or lose $100,000, but I'm still passing the shalom. There's no gzeiras hakosav. However, shouldn't we fear that his negius will ruin his judgment? But the Chazanish, what I told you, he says no, because the Talmud Chacham has a far, 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 far greater negius than the negius of those $100,000. He has a negius that tomorrow morning, when he looks into his shaving mirror, he wants to be able to look himself in the eyes. Right? He wants to be a mensch. He wants to be an Eved Hashem. And he's not going to sell that downriver for $100,000. Not worth it. Right? $100,000 is not to be sniffed at. Well, it's a nice thing to have. But le'ein erech, it's a lot nicer to be a mensch. You're able to look yourself in the eyes and say, I'm somebody who doesn't sell his principles for money. So Chasnish says that for an Elech Yid, no negius is going to lead him away from the path of Emes. Not because he won't submit to negius, but because he has a far, far greater confidence in negius. He'll do exactly what a human being will do, namely he'll follow his negius. And his negius is to do the right thing. I think that's the etzah. The etzah is, if you want to make sure that you're doing the emes, and you're not allowing your negius to run away with you, make yourself that other negius. Show yourself and teach yourself and live yourself how nice it is to be a mensch. Be a good person, be an honest person. Then you'll be okay. And that's what our Gedolei Yisrael did. They were very, very elephant-mensch, and they were willing, and did in fact, sacrifice very, very great things in order to be good. And goodness, bought with sacrifice, becomes a very, very precious commodity. And you're not going to risk that. You find that in everyday life. You know, you keep on getting consumer advice, don't just buy things through the mails, and you have some fly-by-night company, they offer you something, right, half the time you get burnt. So what's the etzah? Right, the etzah is go to a well-established company. Why? Because it's not worth it for them, right? I mean, they're going to build a few people out of a couple of $100,000, it's lunchness, their good name, right, which gives them an advertising advantage, which gives them name recognition, is a million times more important to them than the money that they can make out of sending shoddy goods or whatever it is. That's bidiyuk, the thing over here. So the pshat is like this, that once Torah is nimsa to us, then we, with our limitations, with our humanness, with our frailties, with our middos, become the final arbiters of what the emes of Torah is, at least what the emes of Torah is for us. Therefore, I think that by definition, I don't know whether formal klal, I'm not sure what the formal klal means by Shama Vesilal either, but at least in an informal sense, the emes is, yes, that all ideas, all shittas within Yahadus, if they are reached by people whom we can assume, who we can assume to be people who strive honestly, decently, ehrlichly for the conclusions which they do reach, and that they reach them within the Gedorim of the Messiah. They see Chazal, they see Rishonim, they see Paskim, they see Shittas, and all that together forms their minds and forms their opinions. Then we must believe that there is room in the Torah for that Shitta too. Doesn't mean that I must believe that that Shitta is Emes. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel did not believe that the ideas of the other one were emes. They believed that they were sheker, because their own reasoning and their own eon in the sugya had yielded result A and had been shoylel result B. So result B is wrong. But it is divrei Elokim chayim in the sense that it was a conclusion legitimately reached by Talmud Torah, and therefore one which could reasonably have been emes, except for the fact that as I see the emes, it happens to be Shetah. So l'man after minute that I know what Eilu Ve'Eilu is working from, l'man after minute that this has a legitimate place in Torah too, and after minute to that is the attitude towards the person who reached that decision. I do not agree with what he says. I think that he is 100% wrong. But the fact that he is 100% wrong does not delegitimize him as a person. And it does not delegitimize the Talmidim who follow that person in his Hadrafa as being given of the Hashem in precisely the same way as I am. I believe them to be dead wrong, but I believe them to be dead wrong in the right kind of way. I believe that what they're doing is absolutely wrong, but absolutely justified. And once I have formulated that in my mind, then my attitude towards them will be one of Derech Eretz, of Harotze, Ahava, Achva, Shalom, Reyes, which itself justifies me in being totally and immovably firm in my rejection of the shitta. Moshe always, of the correct gisha to somebody whom I agree with or I disagree with totally, nobody will say that destroying a Beis HaMikdash and burning Yerushalayim and sending Klal Yisrael into Golos are particularly good things. They're not. They're very bad things. Right? Nevertheless, you find in the Gemara that Yochanan ben Zakkai said, "And the Sanusa Shel Rabbi Shlaiben of Kulach, what was his name? Right? Hachriva as Boteinu, Vesofa as Ureinu, Vigisonu ben Mo'amim." Yochanan ben Zakkai held that Hanhoga of Yomru dot Matel Mum Bekotchem is the Misa. That's a wrong Hanhoga, an absolutely wrong Hanhoga. And he felt that was Goyim the Chuk. In other words, here was a case where people had to think on their feet. Come to whoever it was, put this mum on the curb. Now what to do? You either do this or you either do that. So somebody took the achrayus and said, I believe that the permanent values of Klal Yisrael, that people should know that matel mum bekotchem is not the misa, preempts the short-term chalpa. And I don't mind being machir the Beis HaMikdash. That's a yid with masir, right? So I don't mind being machir the Beis HaMikdash, because the Beis HaMikdash can always be built again. However, the emes of Torah has to be maintained. That's a shitta. Yochanan ben Zakkai was machriya that it was the wrong shitta. But he was machriya it with total coherence. Remained a shutter in the Sanhedrin, he remained a rabbi Yochanan of Kulach. And he was wrong. It was a shutter which was legitimately elicited from the Makaros. It was a shikul hadas, and the Torah allows for shikul hadas. You know that from the halacha, there's an inyan of Torah by Mishnah, there's an inyan of Torah shikul hadas. But shikul hadas is also a chelek of hachro in Torah. And if the Torah submits its klolim to our shikul hadas, the Torah is willing to risk the frailties of human shikul hadas. If I did it wrong, I did it wrong. But I did it legitimately. That is the yesod of Eilu Ve'Eilu Divrei Chaim as it applies in our situations. Shat kulam miroye echad nidlam. That the various shittas provided they were reached legitimately, kam me roya echad, the same roya who gave the Torah, recognized the possibility of both these shittas being yielded.
Mm-hmm. Where did you pick that up? Well, who said it's wrong? Well, who's talking about the particular issue of Adisha Ga'atvim Ka'atvim? You mean, is this something which would fall under the rubric of what I described? Theoretically, it could be. If I were to hold, for example, right, that it is absolutely wrong, regular Tuesday morning, what? To go out and be Makarev Arachek when you should be sitting and learning, if I were to hold that, right? And I know that Rabbi so-and-so down the street holds differently, yeah? Then that would indeed be a very good moshul of what we're talking. I would hold that he's absolutely wrong, but I would hold that he reached his conclusion legitimately. But I don't know what I hold in this situation. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. I really don't know. What do you hold about? Uh-huh. Well, I would qualify that and say this, that when I said that the other shita is absolutely wrong, I don't mean that in every single case of disagreement that is an indispensable factor, right? It could very well be that there are two perfectly legitimate hanhagas, right? And that I, for various cheshbonos, come down on the side of that one, and somebody else for various cheshbonos comes down on the side of that one. In other words, I'm not saying, I surely didn't mean to imply, that in every single issue in the world, there's only one emes. Right? I don't mean that. I don't mean that every shaila has only one absolute right or one absolute wrong. I'm saying that even in a situation where I hold that the other shita is absolutely wrong, that is not shaila, the possibility of its being elevated like in time, right? But I think that there are myriads of instances where any one of many, many drachim may be correct and good. But nevertheless, I do the one and I don't do the other. That's it. Because the Chazanish says it's a Gzeiras HaKosov. In other words, it's not that the Metzius of the Negius is Ma'abar. Right? The Metzius of Negius is not necessarily Ma'aveh, because it can be counterweighed by different ideas. But the Torah Aser Shofet, he says, once you're over the Aveda, taking poison, and therefore it is Mesalek, you, from that Siyata Deshmaya, which normally hovers over a Talmud Chacham, when he makes his decisions. This Siyata Deshmaya business is one which I have difficulty coping with. Not that I don't understand it, but I don't understand totally the application. I think I've mentioned before the Chasam Seifer. Sound familiar? In the Igles? The Chasam Seifer had the Hanhoga that when he wrote a tshuva, and somebody wrote back with kashyas on what he had said, he didn't answer. And he wrote a letter once in which he explained that. He said, look, he says, I have this practice not to answer questions which you ask of me for the following reason. He said, I may not deserve it, but for whatever reason the Hashgacha had in mind, I am the Pesach Hador. And therefore, Klal Yisrael is noyeg on my psokim. I cannot believe, he says, that the Rebbeinu Shem will allow me to make a wrong psak. Therefore, I assume that my psak is right. You may be able to bring yourself on this or that raya, quite right, perhaps I made a mistake along the way in a prat. But I firmly believe that the hakhra which I made is the correct one. That's what the Chasam held. Now, fact remains that other poskim felt perfectly free to bring yourself on the Chasam side. Right? In other words, they didn't say, well, he was the Pesach Hador, let's say, and therefore his achloros must have been right, therefore I cannot ding zich on him. You don't ding zich easily with the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer was the Pesach Hador, right? And you don't think so unless you have a very good reason to think so. But once you have a very good reason to think so, you think so. What happens to that Siyata Dishmaya? I'm not quite sure. You find this concept of Siyata Dishmaya used occasionally. I'm not sure the exact value system there. Tasnish, for example, you know that he had a very, very strong shitting about the newly discovered manuscript. Nowadays, in the last few decades, much has been discovered in libraries and so on. New manuscripts, new something which hadn't existed before. Now the shaila is, what do we do with our gesuras, where they clash? So Chasnish was very much against the whole shitter of assigning a great deal of value to the newly discovered manuscripts. And the reason for that, he says, is because he does not believe that the Ribbono Shel Olam allowed Klal Yisrael to act incorrectly over centuries because of a misprint. In other words, the Sofer got up one morning and he had a fight with his wife and he wasn't thinking what he was doing. And he wrote Osser instead of Mutter. So for the next 600 years, Klal Yisrael did this and this and this and this and this. And now the manuscript turned out and now we notice that he made a mistake. Doesn't believe that. Right? Ribbono Shel Olam gave us his Torah, but he's looking after us also at the same time. And he's not going to allow that we should do the wrong thing because of a stupid thing like that. So it's besides the fact that states of that. Doros and Doros were my senefesh themselves and killed themselves for all of Shel Torah in order to be mevara the Gesuras and to make sure that the Gesuras are correct. However, that's his reasoning. So Siyata Dishmaya does play a role. Who has Siyata Dishmaya? By what is Siyata Dishmaya determined in that? Surely we can expect that somebody who is a Meire Derech for huge segments of Klal Yisrael will have a greater Siyata Dishmaya than perhaps somebody who paskens only for himself or for a handful of people. But it's such a nebulous kind of concept, I wouldn't know exactly whether it can in any way have a useful application. Yes. I am Devon. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't think that the Chassam Sofer said that no mistakes can ever be made, right? I think that what he said is that I assume, unless shown otherwise, that I was right. What? Okay, I can't tell you. I really don't know. I mean, like I say, it's a very, very nebulous concept, and I'm not sure exactly how to handle it. In what case? That by so what was his shayfet? I'm not sure, I don't know. I don't know that what the Chazanish says is particularly Muslim behavior. I really don't know. I mean, it's the kind of thing which when I saw the Chazanish, I must say over the years, you know, I guess everybody in his life comes across certain things which sort of strike a responsive chord. I hang on to that Chazanish like a drowning man hanging onto a straw because it's the only thing that makes me able to live. Because you understand, if I would have to be choshed every time a God will say something, yeah, that maybe he's got this negius and that negius, so then I'll be ready to throw in the towel. I mean, then I'll never know anything, right? I can't trust anybody ever, right? Therefore, I'm extremely happy with the Mahalat, and it's one which I can live with. If the person is an Erech Yid, I can trust him, right? If the Chazal Ish were not right, yeah, and if Taka, even the Elichist of Elich people, right, the Gedolei Yisrael, are going to be open to accusations of Megillus. So then you're left with anarchy. I mean, so whom can you trust? I mean, because the fact is that there is always Megillus. That there is always Megillus. And the greater you are, the greater your Megillus. Let's take a god who's got 100,000 followers, right? And he knows 100%, right? What he says, yeah, those 100,000 are going to accept. Yeah? Can you imagine what Megillus he has not to alienate those 100,000 people, right? And not to say a psak, for example, which will make him suspect, let's say, and right, lose that allegiance. That's an unbelievable Megillus. So you see, even if, for example, you would take a case where he has no Megillus directly, it makes no difference then, yeah? This could be the den, that could be the den, right? But in the Hachlo Gufa, there's an unbelievable Megillus, right? Every person knows his public. You know the story of Chofetz Chaim about the Pnei Ador, the Pnei Akelet, right? That the leaders of the Dora and the Ixchel Mashiach tend to paskin the way their followers want them to paskin. That's a very strong Megillus, right? I can't live with it. Because then I'm completely at loss. Right? Then I can't trust him. So whom can I trust? Myself. He's a bigger tzaddik than I am. So I'm whoever it is. So then I'm really at sea. But if I know that this was machlir, that an ordinary god will not give in to such a thing. Megillus to do the Ratzon Hashem preempts, it gives me at least some kind of firm anchorage to live with. So I can't tell you that, in fact, everybody agrees with the Ratzon Hashem. I can only tell you that it's made to me personally the difference between able to exist and not being able to exist in any kind of reasonable kind of way. Yeah.